That's crazy. That I can hear crazy. Myself too.
That's yeah. tight.
Whoa.
Does it mess with you a little bit that you can hear yourself?
Kinda. Well, I sound weird, dude.
This is making you super self-conscious.
Dude, this is weird. I want to talk. Sounds so weird. Do I sound like that?
Yeah, this is what you,
yeah,
sound,
you
like.
Sound like this, dude.
Damn, because you guys sound like that. Damn.
You have a YouTube channel and you only realize it now?
No, it just sounds different. Like a very reverb-y.
It's too clear for you, man. Mm.
It's got like this like default broadcasting setup sound.
Are we recording already?
Yeah, we're always recording.
Oh, say a word. Okay.
All right. Well, welcome back to another episode of the Two Track Mind podcast. It's a special one. We've got a big panel today. A lot of interesting things to talk about. You know, the beginning of the season is here. A lot of events happening. We were all just at an event together over this past weekend that I want to talk about today. But before we jump in, we do have a new guest with us. Yalom, thanks for joining the pod.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, and I think one of the topics that I wanted to cover with this group here, right? So we've got Patrick from B Squared. We got Jason Lee from AKA Driver's Paddock, AKA Driven by J, AKA, I don't know. You got too many accounts, man.
I got a lot of different personalities, man.
And I wanted to basically just touch on, you know, we're all doing this car hobby for enjoyment of driving, but we also are creating some content on the side. So I wanted to basically ask each one of you guys during this conversation, you know, why do you do this? Because it looks easy on camera, I think, sometimes, right? Outside in, but it adds a lot of extra weight and work to pull it off. But before we get there, let's introduce our guest, Yalom. Yalom, who are you and how do you spend your time and energy?
So, yeah, like you said, I'm Yalom. I'm actually Turkish, so the name is going to be unusual. Well, my time, honestly, these days, I'm not doing that much stuff except for working on the BRZ and trying to basically put out content like on a consistent timeline, right? We're shooting for like once a week. Right, but we're gonna try to basically up it up a little bit, maybe twice a week, once we actually have enough stuff to do and enough stuff to like film and create content. Right. Other than that, I'm a personal trainer, so like my days are usually like start really early, 5 a.m., 6 a.m., and then finish up earlier than usual too. Right. I'm usually done around 2-3. And then that means after that, all the time I have, it's either creating the content or just working on the car or, I don't know, going to a lapping day to be able to create content, right? So that's basically what I'm doing now.
Yeah, you always got to find those events that are good catalysts for creating content and try to make like 3 pieces or 4 pieces of content from a single event or something like that. Something this guy at the end does all the time.
That's right.
Just keeps switching between.
Yo, 4 videos from the last event. That's crazy.
And it's intense. Like, I mean, I struggled to do 1 video from 1 event. And I was like this guy running from car to car, talking to, I don't know, like a million people. Right. And it's intense.
Yeah.
It is intense.
Yeah. And, you know, we've kind of introduced Patrick and Jay in the podcast in depth, and we always kind of explore what in our childhood really kind of put us into this obsession and why we do this. So I'm kind of curious to get your take on, you know, what was it about cars or motorsports in your childhood and that really hooked you onto this hobby? And what would you say was your first car memory from childhood?
Well, I have to say it kind of runs in the family.
Okay.
Right. My dad loves cars. My 2 older brothers, they love cars. So it was only a matter of time for me to actually get into this.
Yeah.
Right. But like in terms of the earliest memory I have, I don't know what exactly was my earliest memory, but I remember my older brother taking me out in his car. We used to have a 2000 Ford Focus.
Yeah.
Right. And that was the time when rice was actually cool, right?
Yeah, you hear that?
Yo, it still is.
It still is, yeah. I mean, I still have that ricer in me. So, like, yeah, definitely. But, I mean, I've seen that guy go out usually at night, hang out with his friends, right? Like, they used to bring their cars around. And I'm talking about like the age of 8 or 9, right?
Yeah.
So like it's really blurry, but I remember them being really happy. I remember them having one like common, we can say hobby or some common, I don't know, passion, right? Something that makes them happy, basically, right? And I kind of liked that, not because it was cars, but it was because it was a community, right? And it was my first time seeing something like that, like people gathering around for one thing, right?
Yeah.
And
cue the Vin Diesel family meme.
Yeah.
Corona's right. Everybody. Oh, we're drinking around beer, guys. This is not right.
Yeah. So like, I mean, meats like that, like, I mean, meats back then, they were not like the meats now, right? Especially where I grew up.
Yeah.
Right? It was used to, like, it used to be just people coming together, driving along, driving together, right? And then just stopping by somewhere, get out of the cars, have a chat. And then,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If you want to leave, leave. If you want to like keep driving. It was that kind of stuff that kind of got me into cars, right? And as soon as I was a little older, I started driving that car, right? I started saving money so that my brother could actually like buy parts for that car, right? So kind of became an emotional thing for us. Like, I mean, we're three brothers, and I don't know, from the age of 12 until the time that we actually sold that car, my only focus was to just save a little of money so that we can spend that money on that car and, like, I don't know, buy a set of wheels, buy a set of tires, get suicide doors, which we did actually.
No way. Yo, how race are you talking, man?
Oh, now I'm talking race.
Like sex, oh, sex back.
Like, yeah, well, give, yeah, me, like, give me like a quick rundown. Like suicide doors, what else?
Suicide doors, carbon fiber looking hood. what else? I don't know. Like a really badly done turbo kit.
No way. A Ford Focus.
Like Ford eBay Focus. Special.
Yeah, eBay special, basically. We didn't have eBay back then, but yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember the old VW ad for the Mark VI Golf where there was a dude in a garage and he was dressed with like lab wear?
Yeah.
And to advertise. Yes, exactly. And he had the beginning example was some dude who modified a Ford Focus, like very sex spec.
Yeah.
And then they dropped a container on it. Yeah. And when you open the container, it's GTI. So I think you lived that life. They crushed your car, though.
Like we kind of did, honestly. Like we had a speaker that was way too loud. Like you couldn't even breathe in the car if that was on. Yeah. Like I'm talking rice. Right? Like I'm talking about trying to get on a car magazine rice. Right.
Successful. So.
Not really, no.
Yeah. Who knows? Never too late. Never too late.
You never know.
Yeah. Yeah. So between the Focus and now you have your BRZ.
Yeah.
What happened in between? Anything crazy?
Well, kind of. Let me start with the first car I had. It was my mom's car, Peugeot 307. I don't think you guys have that in North America, right? No. It's the small hatchback.
Yeah. Right? When you go over to Europe and you go get a rental car, that's a pretty common one.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So we had that, and that's the actually first car that I ever took to a track, right?
Nice.
And
take, I always, what you got.
Yeah, like, I mean, I always tell that to people who are like, I don't have a car to track. I'm like, if you have a car, you have a car to track, right? Just make sure that it works, it's safe, right? And just go out and see, right? Yeah. After that, your priorities are going to shift. You're going to end up basically spending money on what you actually like, right? So, but yeah, don't want to go too off topic. But yeah, after that, the first car I actually bought with my own money was a BMW 1 Series, the F20 chassis code, the hatchback one, which also you don't get here service? In North America.
What's your thing?
Yeah. but yeah, that was a 118i, I think. Yeah. So 1.6 4-cylinder rear wheel drive.
Oh wow.
Yeah, super fun car. That honestly,
sounds like an awesome car.
It does look good. Yeah. Also rental spec.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why BMW actually like don't sell that here.
Yeah.
But it's an awesome car. I think
it's not too small of a car for the North American market.
It's a hatchback though. Like,
I know it is.
It's
2-door hatchback, 4-door hatchback.
You can choose. You have both. Oh. Yeah.
It's like the, because I used to drive my brother-in-law's 318 TI, which was like the E36 compact.
Yeah.
Which I guess that became the 1 Series hatch. Very cool.
Maybe, yeah. maybe, but it was a super fun car. Like, I mean, that was when I basically learned how to drive a real wheel drive car, right?
Mm-hmm.
Learning driving techniques, that kind of stuff. And then I started spending a lot of time at the track only because I thought the car was better fit for that kind of stuff, right? Yeah. And like, I had lower control arms from 1M. I don't know, to add camber to the front.
Yep.
I had KWs on it. Wow. Yeah. But I'm talking about like a 4 years of ownership.
Yeah.
Right. So we started with a stock car and I basically ended up with something that's too much for a one series. but it's yeah, it was fun. Yeah, it was fun. Definitely. Yeah. After that, I got the BRZ. And the only reason I did that, I wanted something manual and I wanted something a little bit more analog.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and at that time, the BRZ was pretty much the only option that we had and that I could afford. So after I got the BRZ, I really got into like driving, getting a little bit more professional with the stuff that I do, getting some coaching from people, spending even more time on the track. And that eventually like got me introduced to people who've been doing this for a while. Right. And then I tried drifting a little bit for a while. I didn't compete. Right. But I did drifting schools a lot. So for that, I bought a E36 328i, I think. Yeah. It was either 325 or 328. I don't remember.
I get confused with all these numbers.
Yeah, me too.
Seems so similar, I'm sure.
Yeah. And that car was so cheap. That was only because it was actually two different cars put together. So yeah, like I mean, you could actually see the floor from the floor pan because there was no metal down there. Like, I could see the roof. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. But I had the most fun with that car. Yeah. We welded the diff, stock engine, right? Just put a handbrake on it, and yeah, that's it. That was my weekends back then.
Nice.
After that, for a brief amount of time, I actually owned an AE86.
Ooh,
yeah,
okay.
With a S2000 engine in it.
Wow.
Yeah, F20C, I think. Yeah. So, and we actually bought that engine to be 2.4.
Wow.
And it had ITBs on it.
That must have been like really fast.
It was fast. It was basically like a go-kart.
Yeah.
That was like, it was fast, no interior, so super light, no assisted steering or anything.
Yeah.
It was one of the most fun cars I've ever owned, but I only owned it for like 6 months. So I didn't really get to enjoy it. I had to sell it. And then I bought a daily. It was a Golf, which was basically like, it made my life easier because until then I was actually dailying the BRZ and it was in the same shape that's my current BRZ in now.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I mean, bucket seats, suspension, wheels and tires. Not super comfortable.
Hold on. So, the A86 with the S2K swap, that's here in Canada?
No. That was in Turkey.
Okay.
That was in Turkey.
Okay.
Yeah, that was in Istanbul. Yeah, I actually have pictures. I can send them to you. Maybe you can like those. Yeah,
for sure.
I have pictures of the engine, ITBs, the car itself.
Crazy.
That was a really fun car. Like, I kind of still want to do the same thing now.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be as cheap as we did it back then.
Yeah, maybe a little bit harder to get.
Yeah, because like the shelf was perfect. No rust.
Yeah.
No rust or anything.
Wow.
Like I was really good friends with the guy who were building it.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah, and after that, it's the BRZ here.
Yeah. So and it's kind of interesting to think about, like, you know, you're talking about all these cars. And I know you came to Toronto or Canada 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? What's the car scene like in Istanbul? Like, how can you compare and contrast that with what we have here in Toronto?
Well, I mean, the biggest difference is the car prices, right? In Turkey, cars are really, really expensive, right? So, like, I mean, it can never be your priority. So that kind of changes the scene a little bit.
Now, is that like government tariffs?
Or? Yeah, it's tax.
Okay.
Yeah, like you pay tax for the tax you already paid.
Yeah.
And then like another tax based on those two taxes. So it's that kind of stuff.
How much is this like your BRZ? You know, you bought a BRZ here, you bought a BRZ there.
My BRZ there is basically the equivalent of like a used 911 here.
Yeah. like 60, 70?
Oh, yeah. God yeah.
Damn. No way. Yeah. Really? It's
yeah.
Double.
Yeah.
It's double.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sad, but it is the way it is there. Yeah.
Yeah. When back in college, I spent half a year in Singapore.
Yeah.
And just trying to like understand, you know, how they do the taxation there. Yeah. It's like, yeah, like a Civic back, this is like 2012 dollars. A Civic was like an $80,000 yeah. US car, something like that. And the other thing is, not only do you pay that tariff on the car ownership, but you only have the right to own that car for 10 years.
Wow.
And then you have to like do a, like a crazy renewal or have the car scrapped or something like that.
Wow.
So it just became like something that like, you know, most people didn't have a car, and then everybody who had a car just, you know, it's kind of a major status symbol, right?
So, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, let me put it this way. The BRZ I had, it was the facelifted model. Mm-hmm. And mine was the first one in Turkey with a manual gearbox.
Cool.
Wow.
And then we only had like 10 more after that.
Yeah.
So like, it's rare because, you know, not a lot of people spend that much money on a BRZ in Turkey. They would rather spend that much money on something maybe used,
yeah.
but a little bit more like, I don't know, comfort focused, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah, like you see a BRZ pretty much every time you go out here, right?
Yeah.
That's not the case in Turkey.
Yeah, right? they're everywhere here now.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're everywhere. They're beaters. They've got, you know, Pikachu stickers yeah. on the, yeah, no
Each
hate.
Each of us
no
have
hate.
An 86, man.
Yeah. Each of us.
Whoa, 86, all four man. Of us have one. That's
yeah. right. Some of us have more than one.
Yeah.
man, that's crazy. So now that you're here, you bought in to another BRZ.
Yeah.
You know, let's kind of talk about what you're doing with that car and the content that you're creating, right? So walk me through, and you know, we're going to go around the table with this one too, because I think this question applies to all of mm-hmm. us. But what was your inspiration for making content related to this car? And what kind of voice or tone or, you know, what's your point of view in the content that you're making?
Yeah, so like, I mean, my content is not based on the BRZ. I just bought the BRZ because I love the platform. I know the platform, right? I know what it needs. I know how to drive it. So I wanted to shorten the time that was going to take me to basically build the car and get some seat time, right?
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why I went with the BRZ. But in terms of the content we're creating, it's basically building a track car that you can use to go to and from the track, right? Maybe even daily it if you can handle the loudness of the exhaust.
Yep.
This
guy's experiencing it right now.
Yeah, yeah, right. I mean, it's not too bad in terms of how harsh the suspension is and everything, but it's loud, right? And with the seats I have, it's also not super comfortable, right? But yeah, back to the content. So we built it with Brian. So shout out to Fly Brian, actually. He made everything possible. Like, I mean, yeah. even in the beginning, I told everyone that I don't actually know what I'm doing, right?
Right.
Brian is leading the mechanical part of everything.
Yeah.
Right. He's been doing the work that's like absolutely necessary, the thing that you need it to work, right?
I just got a YouTube notification from your channel right
from
now.
My channel?
Yeah, right really? Now. It says, do you wash your own car?
Oh, yeah. I posted a short, Instagram actually.
Short. Right yeah. now while you're
working? No, kidding, it was like 3 hours ago or yeah, something. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, it's good to know that you have your notifications.
Yeah.
Yeah. So far, it's been mostly building the car, yeah. right? We put out some episodes, and each episode has been focused on one aspect of the things that we're changing, right? Like, I mean, you have the suspension as one episode, the interior, like putting the seats in, putting the cage yeah. in, and then what else do we have? The exhaust, right? That kind of stuff, right? Wheels and tires. And now we're switching more to track-focused content, right? Like, yeah. it's just us spending a lot more time on the track and trying to become better drivers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Who would you say are your role models, so to speak, or like inspirations in the content space related to cars? Anybody you kind of look up to and say like, wow, like, you know, they make really cool content. I want to try and do something like that.
I mean, all the guys that are known by everyone, basically, at this point. Like, it's, I don't know if you guys watch them, but like TJ, Rob Dom, right? Mm-hmm. Beast for Build. Like, those guys basically got me into watching YouTube and spending that much time on YouTube, right? And I've been following them since the beginning, right? Since they actually started their journey. So it was cool to see them become something really big, right? I would say that's kind of an inspiration. But for me, this YouTube journey, it's always been more emotional than it is like financial or something else, right?
Yeah.
Because like I said in the beginning, I spend maybe too much time watching those guys do what I'm doing now. And I spend too much time dreaming of being in a place where I can actually do that and film it, right?
Yeah.
And now that I'm in that place, I kind of owe it to my past self to do it now, right? So that's the main reason why I'm doing it. And I also enjoy it really much, a lot, right? So
That makes sense. One of the things you mentioned in your episode zero video.
The introduction
was that, you know, you're attempting to do this as a non-native English speaker, right?
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about that. Like, did you ever consider, like, doing the content in Turkish, or did you decide from the beginning that
I did, but it wouldn't have made a lot of sense to do the content in Turkish because all the people around me are like, they can't speak Turkish, but I can at least speak a little English, right? And YouTube is a place where if you want to actually reach a bigger audience, you have to put some English content out there, right? Even if it's subtitles, right? And I knew that I wasn't gonna actually bother with writing subtitles for everything I say, right? So it just made more sense to like force myself out and just do it in English to my best capability, basically, right?
Sure.
It's not easy. Definitely not easy.
Yeah, just another layer of complexity.
But you know, sometimes it takes only one take, sometimes it takes three takes, but eventually you get there, right?
That actually reminds me a lot of like one of my favorite channels right now to watch is Night Ride.
Yeah.
It's from Poland.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you said, like following people for a long time, I don't think I watched their stuff from the very beginning. It was like post after, like they had that big crash video with the E36 that kind of launched their channel. But up until that point, they were doing all their stuff in Polish. And I think Sam was just like manually typing subtitles and stuff like that. And he made that switch to you know, push himself and push all the guys to do it in English. And then like as a native English speaker, you watch it and you're like, you don't really notice it, right? Yeah. Like it's good. They like really worked on it and it's great.
Yeah.
And I think it's just like, it's kind of cool to see the scene from different places, right? You almost feel like a longing to kind of go out there. Yeah. And I know a lot of people who are like into drifting, like in Poland, it's like, it's crazy, right? So kind of cool to see that stuff happening.
Yeah.
I mean, let's go around the table. I kind of want to ask both you guys, right? Maybe Patrick, point of view on the channel and like inspirations.
Yeah, I mean, the point of view on the channel, I didn't initially, I started making content initially because I wanted to just record my life in the automotive space. I didn't think I was going to go like big with anything, and in all cases I haven't, but the idea is that I can look back on something in the future to say, okay, I was part of something, I was part of a community, I had fun doing it. This is when I was making stuff on my own, like Patrick Drives YouTube channel, when I was just recording stuff OTA, because I can look back on it and think, oh, that was cool, I did that lap time, or I used to post like videos of this time I went to Japan and like I got a bunch of car parts and like I vlogged about it. Nobody cared, which is fine. But then it taught me a bunch of skills that when my friends and I started B-Squared, it was like, oh, okay, I can share information or create entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And with B-Squared, it was like, we can do a little bit of both of that, especially with how popular the track guide started to get. Every time I go to a racetrack, somebody's like, hey, dude, like are you that guy from that video? And I was like, yeah, man, like, thanks for watching. Like, it's an awesome feeling. So, the content portion of it is getting harder. And with me taking on a new job at work over the past couple of years, it's been tough to keep up. But with like new me and a little bit more like work life stability, I think it's becoming fun again. And it used to be pretty difficult to continue making content, but now the idea is to just showcase to people that you don't have to come from some affluent background to do this.
Yeah.
I like mainly started from, you know, just as soon as I got out of university, I didn't have that much money. I bought the cheaper car that you can buy, and I've been having fun with it ever since. And I think my main goal is to show people the doing it yourself aspect, whether it's putting a car together, building things, or learning how to drive a racetrack, or data analysis, or I don't want the perception that you only have to come from a large sum of money to have a really good start in motorsports, because that's not true.
And who would you say your inspirations were in getting started
early on? Hoonigan. I would watch build breakdown videos all the time in sequence, and I feel like a lot of like some of my humor and phrases were from like early Hoonigan. But then they would showcase a lot of people who like would often do their own builds, and then they would go rip them. And a lot of the times it was in like the drift scene.
Right.
Very entertaining to me to watch, but I'm like, wow, like Chelsea Denofa like put together this car, and Chelsea's page too. His like early days when he had this like E36. I mean, I just watched that stuff and be like, hey, these are like dudes in like their garage. They're in a driveway. You name drop TJ Hunt, very similar thing. It's just a dude in his driveway doing stuff. Like, why can't I do that? So I started to do it, and I realized, oh, I can do this. That's where that came from.
All right, Jay. You've been thinking about your answer for this one?
What are the two questions again? Number one is why we started it, and like sort of
what's the point of view of your channel, and you know, who are your inspiration?
I'll start with the second one. Like you know, Chris Harris is a big one, right? Chris Harris and Top Gear.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. We all watch Chris Harris and Top Gear, right? I just find them so entertaining, and you just tell that they're passionate about cars, and you know, I think cars have a very unique personality, right? They're almost like people. And being able to experience that, enjoy it, and then to tell other people about it is really interesting to me. You know, I started the channel because last year I drove over 10 cars. I drove 7 cars in competition. You know, like the TSX, Audi TT, the M-Tech 1, Elantra N, Gen 2 BRZ, M2, a bunch of other cars. I've drove so many cars last year. And so I sometimes even forget, like, oh, I drove that car. You know, when someone brings it up, like, oh, I've driven a ZLE, right? Or whatever. So I kind of started forgetting some of those things, some of those experiences. So I really wanted this year to capture that. Capture not just, you know, the car itself, you know, its personality and all the things that make the car the car, but the feeling that driving a particular car can give you, right? And so I don't want to forget those things. So that's why the channel exists. And to I know not everyone has the, you know, privilege or the opportunity to drive all the cars I've driven. This year I have driven like GT4s, G87s, like S2000s, all these modified cars, and all these really cool stock cars as well. And so I just want to, for myself, remember it, but also show other people that might not have the opportunity to drive these cars, and then also kind of document some of my own time attack and endurance racing that we're all doing together, right? So that's kind of where mine comes from.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's interesting you mentioned Chris Harris, because I think that comes through in a lot of your style as well, right? Like trying to keep it entertaining, but like the format of the videos, right? Talk about the cars, talk about the history, how it came to be, some of the nuances, and then just go rip some laps, get it sideways for the camera, you know?
You know what? It's just my driving style, right? Like, it's just like having fun, and Chris Harris is like a really big influence, I guess. Yeah. I love that guy. And of course, Top Gear, and I'll throw Speed Academy in there as well. Like, those guys are just super cool. Oh, but geez. Really, like, I'm just a guy
like with a iPhone camera and, you know, and a GoPro, right?
Yeah, for now.
Just documenting my my experiences. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's been good.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I think, you know, there's like a definitely some commonality between all of us, right? Like, I think for me, starting out, I've always liked storytelling, and that's kind of the, I should say, like, vibe of the story, the videos I try to put out. And, you know, I mentioned, like, Night Ride right now is probably, like, one of my favorite channels. I just love the storytelling that Sam and Mark are putting together. Really great cinematography as well. And then on the other end of the spectrum, like, I would say, like, cut my teeth, like, watching early days of Speed Academy, right? Like, the Ass 2000, I basically copied their FRS build, like, literally copy, like, Driveway Labs carbon splitter, Voltex Type 7 Swan Neck wing. I got a C38 supercharger, so that's a little different. They had a C30. But, like, honestly, I was just like, okay, they're proving it out, and they're doing well. They're doing all the R&D for me. Okay, I'm just going to buy. That's my shopping list right there, right? And, you know, I haven't really spoken to Pete before, but, like, Dave always makes time for anybody online. Like, I remember I just, like, messaged him and just, like, send me, like, essay responses of, like, well, you could think about this or that, blah, blah, blah. So he's been a great wealth of knowledge whenever I need to tap into it. But, yeah, I think, you know, as y'all mentioned, like, there's, like, the emotional aspect of it, which is really, it's a creative outlet, right? There's a bunch of stuff I make. It's, like, you know, they always have this, like, phrase in, like, Hollywood where, like, actors, like, make some movies they make for themselves and others they make for the fans. And sometimes for me, it's like 9 for me, 1 for them kind of deal, right? It's like, I don't think anyone's going to watch this, but I just have to do it, right? So maybe I'll actually ask each of you guys, this is a two-parter, okay? Like, first question is, let's talk about the stuff that's paid off first, okay? So each of us, let's talk about what the most popular video that you have made is and why you think it had appeal and got the views that it did. Let me start over here.
Well, honestly, we're fairly new, right? Yeah. So even the most popular one we have, like, it doesn't have that many views, right? But I'm gonna talk about the feedback I've gotten from people, and that was the first track day video, right? The Shakedown video. After that one, people actually saw like that they can actually go to a track and it's okay not to set a lap record, mm-hmm. right? It's okay to be a beginner at a track. Like, I wasn't a beginner when I did that video. I had track experience, but I didn't have any experience at that particular track, right? And that was also the video where we kind of talked about every little detail about our setup, right? Like, down to the how many clicks we have in rebound, compression, right? The alignment. And then I actually had a couple people reaching out to me and then either asking me for more details about the setup,
right,
or just thanking me for sharing that because it gave them an idea about what to do next, or I don't know, like, what to change next, yeah, right? So that was one of the, I don't know, like, the high points of this journey so far, right? Mm-hmm. Like, people mm-hmm. actually appreciating the stuff that we put out. It makes that time that we spend on working on the car, putting the video out, that kind of stuff, all worth it, right? It's just, even if it's just one guy thanking you for putting that out or telling you that, like, it was a great watch, right? It's there. There it is. Like, I mean, yeah, it's enough, right?
That's rewarding.
Yeah.
Very rewarding. And I think you touch on a really good point with this is that content needs to be relatable.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you put out something that is just, like, and we kind of have to remind ourselves that, like, we're in such a small group of people that actually enjoy,
yeah,
not only enjoy doing this, but, like, are fortunate enough to have the means to go and do it as well, right? And so when we get to too much on the pointy end of the really technical stuff, it really doesn't have as much appeal, right? And I think, like, speaking of, like, talking with Dave from Speed Academy, I always message him and say, hey, can we get more, like, track reviews, track battles, or, like, do, like, those, like, events. Like, I love their Ontario 1500 series, mm-hmm. right? But he's like, you know, like, the audience for those is just a little bit more limited, right, compared to some of the stuff that they might do on the shop, right, doing, like, sort of installs on common parts and stuff like that just has a bigger appeal. And sometimes you just have to make that business decision to do it, right? But yeah, relatability is huge, absolutely huge. Patrick?
Yeah, I think on a very similar topic, the videos that we've put out that have done the worst are the very specific data analysis ones. So you have this large community of people in racing who enjoy building the car, taking it to the track, and then you have a very small group of people that are trying to get intimate with data analysis. And this was my perception.
He's thinking. He's thinking he's a goal.
No, man. Okay, I'm going to stop you right there, Patrick. Okay, so we're talking about which video was most successful, right?
Yes, yes.
We don't measure success with the views, okay? You know what I'm saying? If you didn't make those videos, we wouldn't be sitting here together. We wouldn't be homies.
That's
we wouldn't
true.
Be boys. You know
that's
what I'm saying?
True. Yeah, it's
so,
true.
So, boom. Big payoff right here.
We did meet because Jay was big one payoff of my clients right here. To
exactly.
start with. So,
highly recommend it. B-squared. Data analysis. If you want to go faster, it's the only way right here.
I love you, Jay.
That's right.
But see, there is a pretty small subset of people who find it interesting.
Yeah.
But I seem to find a little bit of a blend with the track guides, where I started to add a little bit more data into the track guide. Very visual, adding like headings, adding reference points, all these things that, okay, maybe you can relate to the track portion of it. Maybe you don't fully understand the data portion of it. But here in all six of the Ontario road courses, not including ovals, because we like to turn both ways sometimes. don't get me wrong, I love ovals. I made these track guides, and they by far got the most views because...
Yeah. Evergreen. Yeah. Search.
Yeah, people looking this stuff up all the time. And obviously the one to watch is the TMP guide, which maybe I'll redo because now the ground looks different.
And it's a little different, eh?
Yeah. They don't have the same reference points, but I think on the topic of being relatable, TMP was very relatable because everybody just drives it. It's everybody's home course.
It's accessible.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. That makes sense. But I mean, I you touched on a good point about like the technical parts, but then as Jay said, like there's an audience for it and the payoffs are different. Right? So a bit of an aside on like the business side of things, right? Like, okay, we're super small timers, but My background is business. I went to business school twice. It's a little bit too much business school. But like the way that you think about it is like you have your this big funnel and this big community trying to create. Some of the stuff is for people for entertainment, others for education. And then there's like a group of people who are like, I want to like super educate myself and I'm willing to make that investment happen, right? And getting those people, right? So like how do you sprinkle that content in so that people can find it, right? And move forward. Now, the tricky thing is with YouTube is it really likes it when you figure out what your pattern and your formula is and you just kind of rinse and repeat and refine, make that even better, right? You look at the stuff that, you know, Donut does. You look at the stuff that like Super Broad, you look at Mr. Beast, like they just kind of come up with the same patterns and make it a little bit better each time, but they figured out what works, right? Now for us, like, you know, some of the stuff we do that because we're just getting started and we're trying to figure out what works, there's like shop days, there's like track days, there's track reviews, there's like more story driven stuff, more documentary style stuff. That can be a little bit confusing for the audience, right? How like to make it consistent. You know, is that something that you guys have thought about and like how do you kind of deal with that?
Yeah, huge challenge because there is the aspect of like, okay, yeah, you can do data analysis on your own, but then there's also like, I want to be more relatable and show, okay, I'm doing mechanical work on my car on my own. I'm not paying a shop to do it, not all the time. And then there's the other aspect of like, okay, well, endurance racing, that's even less relatable because the cost of entry is relatively pretty high. So who, I like identifying yourself, I'm definitely not at that point where I'm like, this is who I want to be. This is the content I want to make.
Yep.
Yeah, for myself, I mean, my channel is, it started off more as like, the first video was a in-depth dive of the TT, right? I mean, like my video skills were really bad back then. They're improving, getting better. But the audience that I captured is like very, very hyper-local. It's probably like all the Lucky Dog people who have seen the TT, you know, like I posted in like, you know, Audi True North, that sort of thing, right? And then started doing more track guides. Track reviews. And so those were much more popular, right? Because you don't have to be very local to really appreciate it, right? And so I think the a challenge with that is you kind of have to have the latest, newest car for a track, so for a car review to really get a lot of views, right? And so, like the G87 M2 video I posted, I think it's at 13K views, I think, right now. I'm sure all those are G87 M2 owners or people who are, like, you know, thinking local or thinking about it, right? And so for myself, yeah, I think I'm going to stick with track guides. And then either
track
track car reviews.
He's coming for your views, man.
Track car reviews. and then maybe like another channel for time attack and endurance racing. I don't know, because the endurance racing stuff I post, like, no one really watches.
Yeah,
same.
And the time attack stuff, I'm not sure. We'll see.
Yeah.
Right? So I have, you know, 2 time attack events next week. I'll post the content, see how it does. But I think people are more interested in the car track reviews. So I think I just have to stick with that and keep going with it. Yeah.
And also, I just want to add to that. Like, I mean, Jason usually track reviews those cars in a certain track, right?
Yep.
That helps too, because people then have
comparison.
Like a reference lap time to see how fast that car actually is, right?
Yeah.
Or like how fast Jay can actually drive a certain car at that track, right? It makes the whole content a little bit more relatable. It makes the content make a little bit more sense to the viewer, right? So that's why, like you said, it's important to have like a really clear path, like a niche, right? And work on that a little bit, make it better every time.
Right? Yeah, a lot of people have asked me, like, can you do like a lap leaderboard, right?
Yeah.
I just think like some of the cars are just so highly modified. Some of them are bone stock. And I think lap time depends so much on track conditions, tires, especially, things like that. So I don't know, I'll think about it, I think I do get a lot of people like, oh, what's the lap time. People are so fixated on lap time, as opposed to, I think I'm trying to get the personality of the car out a little bit, and discuss more like handling characteristics, the power.
That's
sort
so cool
thing.
Man,
yeah.
I think the reality of it is, like, you know, it's like in any hobby where there's a lot of money or big purchases involved, you know, people are looking for justification on their own purchase decisions, right? If you bought into the G87, like, you for sure you want to see it doing well and putting down those fast laps, right? So yeah, I totally get the desire for the numbers, right?
Yeah, I think I have this like little niche that is, I mean, there's not a lot of people that really are pushing their cars 10 tenths. Like, most G87 owners probably won't go on the track, right?
And yeah,
like, this technical stuff I try to talk about is, like, I don't know how relatable that is, but I don't care about the cup holders or the interior bits and the you know, the buttons and whatever. It's just like,
yeah,
let's go on track.
Until it starts annoying you when you're driving, like in my GTI. I don't know if you guys heard in the video, the voice commands kept interfering because I kept smashing the phone button. And I'm like messing with the MFD to try to show the speedometer again, because I really need it for like the entry speeds to see, like, okay, like, was that decent or not? But oh man, it was so annoying. Yeah. All right. So, I mean, we talked about, you know, videos that have performed well, a little bit on stuff that doesn't perform as well on the views. Let's talk a little bit more about, you know, the whole like 9 for me, 1 for them mentality. Like, what's the video that, like, you poured your heart and soul into, regardless of outcomes? Like, what's the one that, like, took the most out of you to put together?
The first one, honestly. Yeah. The not the introduction, but the coilover, the suspension upgrade episode. The first one. Yeah. It took, as it does, like, a lot more time than it should have, right? And even the editing, it was basically my first time putting together a video out of all that footage we had, right? And it was also my first time doing like an intro and an outro before and after the video, but yeah, it's there. Yeah, it's actually one of the most viewed videos out there, but every episode that we put out, those are the videos that I did for myself, right? Like, those are the 9 out of 10 videos, right?
Yeah.
And the track ones are, I would say, like 50% for me and 50% for actually like putting content out, right?
Yeah.
Because I really enjoy it. And unlike the mechanical stuff, I actually know what I'm doing, and it's something that I can get better at.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
I think old Numi content from 2021 would be the one that I made for me, because I don't know if like a lot of people relate to going to an endurance race and like the beginning and the end of like how that race went. A lot of people care about the results or some sort of lap time, or they want to watch an entertaining battle. I don't know if there's a huge audience on the behind the scenes. Maybe I'm trying to change that. I do have a bunch of footage from our 2024 first race weekend that we just completed that I'm going to be putting together in a video, but I don't expect it to go crazy. But it is a little bit of like, I don't know, I'm probably going to turn like 50 or 60 in the future and go back into YouTube and be like, oh yeah, I did this thing.
Yeah,
and then I'll watch like a young me and my friends just having a great time at a race weekend while the rest of my friends are at like a golf course or something. Like I just want to enjoy capturing those memories for sure.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have this feeling that like, I don't know, it's almost like FOMO that I won't be able to experience some cars. Like
oh no, there's gonna be cars out there that
I'm thinking about like early 2000s cars, right?
Okay,
like I drove an S2000, like drove like an old Civic, like you know, like these cars are just so different, right? Driving like E36, right? Cars like that, I'm just like, things were pretty different back then, right? And so if we are moving to away from, you know, internal combustion engines and stuff like that, like I want to experience as much of this as possible. I want to showcase that and I want to look back on it. Right.
Yeah.
I want my viewers to sort of like share in my experiences, both at the track and just, you know, enjoying cars. And I think part of the channel will sort of move to now that the season has officially started, getting like more of you guys in the videos as well. Right. Like doing like, you know, track battles, chasing, toge, right? Showcasing some of my friends' builds. Like it doesn't have to be me. There are so many more people that are so knowledgeable about their own cars. For example, like I had like Luke Lay. I drove his GR86 and I'm not really talking. I'm just asking him questions. He's telling me like this and that. This is how I did that. This is why I did that. This is my final drive. Here's why. This is a differential I chose. Here's why. And just, you know, like I'll have like Gabe or you guys talk about your own builds, right? And then it doesn't have to be me driving, really. I mean, I can be part of an experience. Like for Leo, like his GTI is crazy. So he's doing like 16s, 34s at DDT, right? So he knows way more about the car. I just want to share in his experience, get into his mind a little bit, like what makes him tick and why is his car this way, right? And then so, again, sharing that experience, being able to experience it myself, and then hopefully my viewers enjoy it as well, right?
Yeah, for sure. Wait, so... You know, you probably, out of all of us so far, have, like, the most consistent, like, format for your videos and kind of figure out, like, what's working. What would you say in that workflow is, like, the most enjoyable part and the part that you dread the most every time?
The driving part is the easiest, of course, because it's just GoPro and you just drive, right?
Yeah.
And then just, like, the intros and outros, right? I think, like, giving my thoughts part, I always try to do it in one take.
Yeah.
Just, like...
Do you some research ahead of time?
I do research, get the general specs of the car, and I generally will know what it will feel like. Like you look at a spec sheet, I know generally what an FR car is going to behave like, you know, what a mid-engine car is going to behave like, what an all-wheel drive car is going to be like. That's how I can like prepare my body and myself along with data analysis to consider those things, those facts.
Yeah.
There are facts, and then there is actually like experiencing it, driving, putting down the performance, right? So I look at a spec sheet, I look at cars that may be similar. Like, for example, I drove like, I know like a supercharged S2000 will be similar to like a stock M2 competition, which I have data on. Take a quick look at, okay, these are probably my rough entry speeds. This is probably roughly how it's going to behave. You know, oh, this tire has AR1s. Oh, okay, it might pull, you know, X amount of Gs. Like, I'll have a general idea, which is why I can, you know, put down relatively fast times, like, you know, in like 2-3 laps.
Yeah.
Because of data analysis as well, right? Like all the stuff that Patrick and Amanda have taught me. And so I do the research. I get an idea of what I think it's going to be like. I'll watch footage of like a stock M2 comp before maybe getting into like a Camaro SS, for example. I know they'll be comparable. And then from there, feel out the car, work up to it, and then go from there. Yeah.
You still get excited to drive every car, or is it start to feel
no,
like
absolutely.
Sometimes?
I get super excited to drive every car. Yeah. Absolutely. Of course. Yeah.
Dude, you should have seen his face. And I was like, we were at Mosport test day for Lucky Dog.
Yeah.
And my teammate, Nick Maitland, had his GR Corolla Marizo edition.
Yep.
And I was like, yo, Jay, yo, grab your camera. We're doing a video with the
Do
Marizo.
A video right now.
This dude's face was like lit up. It's crazy.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. Like, I can do it on the fly because literally, it's just like, hey guys, you know, here's the car, here's the track, let's go.
Yeah.
We go, I drive it, and then I just give my honest thoughts, right?
Yeah.
You know, what I think about it, how it feels. And then that's it. Do a couple B rolls, you know?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It's really enjoyable. But I mean, when I first started, you know, for anyone thinking about starting their own YouTube channel, yeah, I did like 10 takes on, hey guys, Jason here. Welcome to another episode of Driver's Paddock, right?
Yeah, he's like so, awkwardly sitting on his couch.
Exactly. Exactly. If you go back to my first video, like my friend Sean messaged me, he's like, dude, this is so cringe. Like, I'm going to be honest with you. This is like, you know, yo, like, just, the context, yeah,
leave,
all right, but like, yo,
you're leave it to Sean to tell
like,
you.
Who is this? Like, let your personality come out, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, that's a really important point, right? So I think like, I can't remember exactly where I heard this from recently, but basically a really key part of building like a long-term community and get people to relate to you is like never cut yourself out of your videos, mm-hmm. right? And I think, you know, what you mentioned about like the early new me like videos on endurance racing, right? Yeah. We're kind of, and I did the same thing, right? Like speaking of like things that like I poured my, you know, heart and soul into, like the Road to Calabogie series, that was ton of filming and editing. I still very happy I did because I learned a lot about
that video is amazing, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, like, I wish more people would discover it. Maybe in the future, you know, when the channel gets bigger and people are like, hey, what's this? What's this? And then, you know, it comes back to life. But
they were playing it at MTech, actually. Will was watching it.
Oh, yeah?
He's like, I can't wait for the our video of this. So I'm like, yeah, man, just wait.
Yeah, we got to still film the interviews for that. But I'm excited. See, I find myself doing it again, right? Like, I'm doing another, like, docuseries. But that's, again, like, it gives me a ton of energy to do it. And it helps me practice like storytelling, mm-hmm. but I think what I will try to do now is just like put more of myself in there, right? Because I think, as you said, like people watch your content like for you, right? And so I do think we have some flexibility in terms of like the format and the content of the videos, as long as you don't take yourself out of it, right? And sometimes like we want to tell a story and we're behind the camera, it becomes really hard to, but you gotta like force yourself to be in front of the camera and to tell your audience that, hey, like, you know, this is a familiar setting and they want to see you experience it, right? Like maybe it's very unrelatable to them, but they can relate to you and you're that bridge to help them discover that content, right?
And that's kind of like, there's a scientific reason to that too. Like, I mean, it's basically just genetics that makes you watch if you see a face, right? Mm-hmm. Even if a thumbnail has a face on it, like data actually shows that, and it gets more views, it gets more clicks, right? Yeah. So it's basically built in our DNA to actually watch a face. Yeah, like, I mean,
you gotta pit big faces on this thumbnail.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's like we can't help it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask one more question on you know, the topic of being small creators, and then we kind of move on to something new. I remember I listened to a podcast with TJ Hunt recently on, what is it called? It's like something boys. They it'll come back to me at some point, but they build like ATVs and do stunts and stuff like that. It's like crazy stuff, right? In a shop. And one of the things he mentioned when he was getting started, and I still remember his early days where, like, you know, he posts stuff on like the FD86 forum, mm-hmm. I think, and stuff like that. And, you know, people are giving him a lot of shit for, yeah, like, you know, doing like
questionable,
you know,
rice.
Well, it's just things that any kid at that age with that kind of car would do, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, he's kind of proven everybody wrong in what he's been able to build. And one of the things that he's mentioned, like back in the day, there were just not that many people doing it, right? It was like Evan Shanks, TJ Hunt. That's kind of it for a bit. Like, those are the ones that like YouTube were serving me. And they were just like kind of like vlogging in their cars or driving mm-hmm. places, like going to like Cane's Chicken or something like that, right? In the States. We don't have that here in Canada.
Yeah, Raising Cane's, man.
Raising Cane's, yeah, exactly. Canes. And that kind of makes me think, like, you know, this fascination with cars as a hobby has basically been around since cars were a thing, right? And so, like, of course there was unmet demand and very limited supply at that time. And now we're in this place where, you know, YouTube wants more creators. They're pushing to make things easy, like bring down the barriers, the equipment that are being made are specifically made for creators. So it's like easy to pick up, like, you know, a Pocket 3 and just create a channel from that, right? And so there's so much more competition now. How are you guys thinking about being, you know, unique and kind of sticking out in this, like, very crowded space now, right?
Should I go? Okay.
Yeah.
So, like I mentioned earlier, it's us being a little bit more genuine, right? Yeah. Like me basically doing 126 at TMP and being happy with it, yeah. Right? Because it was my first time. Like, I mean, that relatable part,
yeah.
Right? Because a lot of people like to share the video of them breaking the lap record, but not a lot of people actually...
That guy over there?
No, yeah. But he shares what it took to get there too, right?
Right, right, right.
And that's what we're doing. Like, I mean... All the first lap times I did at any track that I've been to, it's all out there, right? And people hopefully can see that and think to themselves, like, if that guy can go there with a BRZ, like, which is highly modified, I should be able to go there with my stock car and, like, do the same thing, right? So that's, I think, what we're bringing to the table at this point, right? Mm-hmm. Like, being real with the time... lap times, being real with the problems we had with the parts or the installation process of those parts, right? But yeah.
I think I totally agree with that. Being real and staying true to yourself. I made a video a few years ago regarding burnout in motorsports. Mm-hmm. And not in the term of like burning out tires, but like mental burnout. And a lot of it comes from the stresses of participating in this hobby, which can oftentimes include monetary stresses. Yep. They think I need to put all this stuff on my car just to make it to the track, which is like exactly what you said earlier. Like if you got a car that drives, if you can drive it to the track, you can drive it on the track, yeah. Right? So dispelling those barriers to going to the track and participating in the hobby. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the whole DIY aspect of things. And then that will expand into, okay, I can do this racing part. I can compete in like a time attack series. Okay, well, how about wheel to wheel? Oh, Pat's doing wheel to wheel. How did he get there? What's he doing? Okay, maybe the affordability part is tough for a lot of folks, truthfully. But once you start to dispel, okay, well, a lot of teams spend a lot of money doing stuff that doesn't contribute to the performance of the mm-hmm. car. It's... Yep. That doesn't mean there aren't teams doing it for a lot cheaper. And Numi, we try to be a good example. Like, we don't have a enclosed trailer. We don't have anything. Like, we often, like, in 2021, we used to camp. We just set up some tents on the ground and camp, and we were just toughing it out. And to stay genuine and show that side of your personality, I think is what I'm going to lean on, because that's all I got. Yeah. I don't have a similar community as Jay, who are throwing cars at him, and I'm part of that community. I'm going to throw my car to you as well once I've complete my supercharger stuff.
Amazing.
or like, I don't have a lot of like film equipment, and I don't know how to do a lot of video editing, but I'm going to inject the totality of what I can into the content when I can.
Yeah.
So that I'm not giving you something that's like totally half-assed, or maybe it is, but it's all I had at the time. And this is what you get. And I'm not going to burn myself out trying to like, do something crazy. Maybe that's good. Then maybe that makes me a poor content creator.
Yeah.
But I also am trying to be relatable. Yeah. To say that not all of us can do things at the level of yeah. everybody else that we're constantly comparing ourselves to.
For sure. Yeah. I think one of the rules that I kind of live by is you do the things today that make you want to come back and do it tomorrow.
That's cool.
Right.
That's cool.
Like because especially when you're a one person team. Right. With the content, and a lot of times that's the case, right? Like where mm-hmm. you're just kind of doing yourself, like the moment you stop, that's it.
Yeah.
does no one else is going to be pushing it forward for you, right?
Yeah, man.
So, yeah, motivation's important. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's the actual, give me the question again. we're going to so many different areas.
I'm like, this guy is so spaced out.
These guys are saying such profound things. I'm like, damn, really thinking about like what they're thinking, right?
Yeah. Well, it's okay. So the question is how, because it's so, there's so much competition now, mm-hmm. right? And everyone's in, even in like hyper specific niches, there's probably like 100 channels that are competing, right? And YouTube is kind of like a zero sum game, right? There's only so much demand in terms of like viewer hours, and they got to distribute it. How do you make your content, you know, rise to the top?
I see. Okay. So I think I'm fairly niche, right? There's a lot of track reviews from what I feel like journalists that they're not really pushing the car, right? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? And, you know, majority, they are just journalists, right? And so, you know, you see them on tracks with another instructor, and they talk about things that I personally don't really care about, right? I want to know more about like the actual personality, the character of the car, how it performs at the limit, right? What it's like with traction control off, right? Or you know, the handling, balance, and the characteristics. So those are the things that I'm really after, and you know, there are a few channels that sort of touch on it, but I think I do have a niche, but that niche is very small, right? It's like people that are not just going to the track, but people that are, you know, either trying to push for lap times, or maybe they do competition, or they're driving sort of closer to 10 tenths.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like me and my focus, right? That's what we do with endurance racing. It's what we do with time attack. It's what I do when I try to explore and see what a car is like. And that is really only possible close to the limit, right? Getting to understeer, getting to oversteer, four wheel slide, whatever, right? So
yeah makes sense.
Even some of my car friends, they'll watch my videos and they'll be like, yeah, that part was like a little bit too much for me, like I spaced out at that part, right? But some people are like, wow, like that's exactly what I needed, or you know. So
yeah makes a lot of sense. All right, let's park the YouTube conversation for now. As you know, on the topic of relatability, probably losing some people at this point, but no, I think it's good to get to know you guys a little bit more on that, in that context, right? Like how you guys are all thinking about your content journey and where you want to take things. And I'm a huge believer of, you know, cross pollinating and collaborating with people, and you know, basically building the content house for cars without the physical house. is what we're trying to do here, which is always like surprising that like there's so much happening in Toronto, because again, like I say, like we don't even have a season for half the year, and yet there's so many big car YouTubers in Canada, right? Like Straight Pipes and Throttle House, Speed Academy. There's a bunch of drag guys that I don't really know very well, but I think there's like some pretty big drag racer YouTubers who call TMP home as well, right? But yeah, let's park the YouTube stuff. I want to talk about last weekend. So you were all at Most Pro DDT for Ontario Time Attack School. And the topic I want to talk about is actually for Yalom, who participated as a student. Well, first of all, let's just kind of like get your thoughts on how that day went overall.
It was great, actually. Like, I kind of figured out how it works in terms of layout, right? How an OTA day looks like, right? Mm-hmm. From start to finish, like getting the car teched and everything, right? It's a new experience. So it's always cool to basically try something new, right? Mm-hmm. Like driving on a track, it's not necessarily a new experience, but driving in that environment and getting coached in that environment is the new experience, right? So yeah, in that aspect, it was super helpful, a lot of fun. Just they basically like filled off like good people, good cars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I heard you had a troublesome instructor though.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I'm not gonna name any names, but
I heard your instructor the last time you were at DDT was great though.
Oh yeah, he totally transformed the way I drive. Yeah.
Yeah. So
which one was better?
Yeah.
That I'm not gonna answer.
All right. So this is the the spiciest part of the conversation that I was looking forward to, right? So Yalom, over the course of two back-to-back weekends, had two separate instructors. They're actually right here. Yeah. So Patrick at the R Club private DDT day the week prior, and then Jason at the OTA DDT time attack school day. So I'm very curious, because I've never had instruction from either these two guys. How would you describe each of their coaching styles? Let's start with Patrick. What was he like to have in the car?
So honestly, the way he's been speaking since the beginning of this is the way he's instructing. And the same thing for Jason.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's...
So Jason forgets where he is on track.
No.
He's like, oh, can you remind me?
He doesn't.
What corner is this? Oh, yeah.
Wait, what are we doing again?
And Patrick's pulling out some spreadsheets. He's like, yeah, you could take 10% more on this corner here.
Yeah, like, I mean... The approach they have is really different, right? Yeah. Patrick is more on the like data focused scientific side of things, right? Whereas Jason is more on like how the car feels, what the car tells you, right? Like how you should be feeling or what you're feeling in that like a specific corner.
Yeah. Sounds like Patrick's more logical and I'm more emotional. That's what it sounds like.
Kind of, but like, I mean, you can't really say one is better than the other one, right?
Sure.
You kind of need both. And that's where I stand when it comes to getting coached, right?
Yeah.
The more, the better, right?
Yeah.
Because everyone will actually add something to your experience, right? You're going to grab something from like, you'll get, I don't know, like 0.2 faster with every instruction session you have, right? I'm just putting it out there, but like you're gonna gain something from every instructor that you have, right? Because a lot of people who have similar track experience as I do, they're like, I'm good. I can just go out and drive on my own, right? I can just, but if you're doing that and if you're doing a mistake at a corner, that means you're just repeating that mistake, right? Mm-hmm. You're not getting better at that corner, right?
Yeah.
You're just getting better at somewhere else. And that's if you're actually getting faster, right? And chances are you're not going to get faster at some point because you're going to hit a plateau where you can't actually get any faster unless you correct that mistake that you've been doing.
Yeah.
Right?
You need external information to come in.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Right? So, yeah, like, I mean, two really different approaches, right? But equally important and equally... helpful.
It's too nice, man. I was hoping for some dirt.
No.
Some ammunition. No.
What probably happened is like obviously Patrick knows the track amazing. He laid down probably like an amazing foundation. His like right off like session one, his lines were like on point, right?
Yeah.
Breaking in a straight line, turning smooth. Everything was like already in place from Patrick. And then from there I can just build on that, right? If it was the other way around, it would have been the other way around, you know. I think like working definitely on like the line vision, things like that, right?
So. And I can actually prove what Jay said. So when we put out the first video where Patrick instructed me, I did a 147, right? And I wrote down there that I actually felt like I could do 144 or 143, right? And at the end of the day where Jay instructed me, I did 144, right? So
nice.
Just like Jay, just like Jay said, it's laying the foundation and then building on it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You had a different approach probably from the beginning of both days. So the first question I asked you when we got into the car was, what is your goal today? Yeah, what do you want to do? And you mentioned a topic of consistency first.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, can I commend you on that? Because almost like nobody with going to a track day, everybody's thinking about a lap time. We all know that.
Yeah.
I've almost never had a student of mine say, I want to become consistent first. I was like, this guy has his head on way straighter than like 99% of people who go to the track. So there was a version of you that I wanted to build into a consistent driver. And I really believe that we did that because by the end of the day, every call I made, you were on the mark for like 3 to 4 laps straight. I was like, damn, this guy's good.
Yeah.
So come the next time, the next visit, you have this monster in your passenger seat.
Yeah.
And now with this consistency mindset that you've built, you have a guy who's ready to throw you over the edge. And you're like, oh, I have exactly what we were talking about. The foundation was built only for him to build a building on top of it. And now the building is the Burj Khalifa.
Yeah.
So congrats on your 144, man. That was awesome.
Yeah, so he did a 144 with passenger 8009s, staying in third gear. So no second, no fourth in a Gen 1. Mm-hmm. Stock power.
Four and third gear.
That's fast.
Dude, and people ask me all the time, they're like, yo, should I shift? I'm like, no. If you're getting coached, stick it in third. If you're not doing like 45s-ish in the same gear, the gearing isn't going to help you. Sorry.
Continue. And he's not hitting curbs hard. So that's moving.
It was also my second time at that track. So like, fast. I mean, I still need to explore the limits of the track in terms of...
Boy, you're going to be working on this track for years to come, man. It's
yeah,
just like,
and I don't mind that. Tracks. I like that. Like, I mean, and Jay knows this. I come from a competitive background. I used to be a professional swimmer, right, for 20 years. And I missed the Olympic A-cut by half a second. So, like...
Wow.
Damn.
That's still in
me. That's
a
story for another podcast. Damn. That sounds very interesting.
That guy is still in me. And I think part of the reason why I want to compete now is because... I just don't want to stop competing, right?
Yeah.
And this is something that I love. So I might as well compete at this. And every time I go out there, I have a limit, but I kind of need to get someone to like coach me to get there, right? Because like my day job, I'm a personal trainer, so I know how valuable a good coach is, right? Yeah. And my whole life, I had a coach next to me, basically guiding me through everything.
Yeah.
Not just the sport, but my daily life too, right?
Yeah.
So it's like something that you chase. If it's in you, it's in you, right?
Yeah,
for sure. Like, I don't mind learning one track for like 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. I don't mind. I spent 20 years chasing one dream, and I'm fine with spending another 20 years chasing another one, right? Yeah. So yeah, I don't mind being like DDT being a really tough track. It makes me like it even more.
Exactly.
The first thing I told Patrick, I think the first lap, I was like, I love this track, right? Only because it's challenging, and I know it's challenging. And I also know that a lot of people, not a lot of people, but like some people don't like that track.
It's like, oh, it doesn't have straights.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Dude, you're going to become an animal. The spirit of competition is very strong. Like I feel like this is a cool person to be beside at this time. Let's see you in a couple of years where you're like,
and in the summer we'll have to do a debrief.
Dude.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to that, honestly.
Yeah.
And again, like as long as I keep having fun, I don't mind at the end if I win or not, right? If I progress, if I actually become a faster driver, that's all I need.
Yeah. Guys saying all the right things, man. Damn.
No, I think you definitely got put in the right place and having the right instructors in your part passenger, because I feel like there's really like not anybody better that you could have had to kind of get you through that track, get the foundation down, get the secrets, get the shortcuts. Like my day on that day was like kind of more similar to Jay's day. My student Alex already has like a decent amount of experience at DDT, so it was like pretty rewarding just to go with him, and just we basically just worked on cheat codes. I call them cheat codes for the track, right? So it's just like, you know, 6 and 7, you know, he mentions like, oh, like I've been taught to one steering angle through 6 and 7. I was like, well, you know what, like 7, just delay a little bit on the turn in, you'll find a little bit like you'll get on the throttle full throttle earlier and just ride all the way out. He's like, oh, like, you know, it when it clicks, right, it's just so rewarding. Or like through 8, I tell him, like, you know, once you hit that inside curb, immediately start unwinding, because the car will want to over rotate down the hill. But like if you just like, once you clip it, just throw in the counter steer a little bit or unwind, you can just get back on the throttle like
immediately. See, I told you, going through 6 into 7, you'll wait a bit and turn in.
But you know what the interesting thing is, like when we all started DDT, that was the meta, which is like one steer angle through the whole thing. And then we would just like lift a little bit on the exit of 7. Then somebody figured out, hey, you know what, if I just straighten out a little bit and then delay the turn in of the 7, I can get on wide open throttle and just ride it all the way.
But then you can hold one steering angle from 7 all the way to the left side into 9. Crazy, man.
Exactly.
And that's why, like, sick. I mean, that's why having more instructors with you is important, right? Like, I mean, if it wasn't that for that guy, maybe you would have never known that there was actually a faster way around that corner, right?
Yeah.
And like, if I don't know, if I hadn't had one of these guys with me in one of the weeks, I wouldn't have been able to do do 144 on my second time at that track, right?
Crazy.
Yeah. So tell Ginny to come up. Hey, Ginny.
Hey, sweetie.
Hello. Welcome to the podcast.
My wife is here. I told you not put away all the trophies before my friends came over. Like, why would you leave this Cup Sport Championship? My first place GTA, like, it's all over the ground. Like, and these GT1 championship posters, why are they all bent up? Why? Do both of them are here for weekend number one and weekend number two? You're embarrassing me to be in front of my friends.
I'm so glad you found an opportunity to do that. Oh my God.
I'm waiting for her to come home. I'm like, yo, when is she coming home?
That's what he's been thinking about the whole time. It's like, I'm not listening to these guys at all. I'm just scheming.
That's what I'm daydreaming about.
Yeah. All right. So this is actually a pretty good segue. We talk about, you know, 6, 7, 8, all these different corners. What's your favorite corner at DDT? So many to choose from.
Two?
Dude,
nailing two, like the heavy brakes and then the steering entry and just riding the banking. I'm like, oh my God, this is fast. Yeah, that corner is sick.
I'm going to say the last chicane.
Yeah, you like the last chicane?
Yeah. I don't know. I like chicanes for, like, in general, because it's so rewarding if you get it right. And I feel like you can gain a lot of speed if you actually learn how to, like, get out of a chicane fast. But yeah, I'm going to see the last chicane.
That final chicane is the beginning of a lap.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to nail it. Yeah. You got to nail it. But you, Jay?
Turn two for sure, yeah.
Yeah,
turn two. The braking and then using the actual camber.
Yeah.
To carry a lot more speed than you think you can. And then the throttle control on the exit.
Mm.
Yeah. Is very enjoyable. Yeah. Very fast corner.
T2 is always one where, like, from the instructor seat, like, my go-to hint, so to speak, is always, like, look up the hill. Like, as fast as you can to the exit and just fixate on the exit of the corner. Don't forget about, like, you know, where the car is at. Just see where you're going. I think I probably would have said too, like, maybe a year or two ago, but right now what I'm finding the most challenging, maybe not the most exhilarating corner for me, but the most challenging is definitely 13. So
bus stop
kink.
Bus stop.
Just every car is going to feel a little bit different going up that hill and trying to not overbrake, right? Yeah. And using the hill to help you, like, perfectly nail the braking. But if you, like, underdo it, you're going to go wide or the car is going to get loose in the rear as you try to stay pinned to the inside and whatnot. That's one, like, you can never really get the same corner in a session, even, like, let alone a day. It's just like you're trying to nail it, right? Because I think when we first started driving DDT, it was like people would brake, turn, get back on gas, and then brake again for the downshift and keep it to the left. Like, it always just felt a little bit wrong, right, to be like on off throttle so much. And then now I'm just trying to figure out, like, how do I, you know, carry brake into, like, trail brake gentle, right, but, like, come in as fast as I can, turn in as early as possible. It's still, I find, the trickiest.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. We worked on that for a while.
We did. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Even with Jay after that, like, I mean, that was a problem corner for me for a long time.
Yeah.
But then once you actually know what to do, like you said, it's never going to be the same every lap.
Yeah.
But once you actually get a better idea of what to do and when to do that, it's really rewarding.
Yeah.
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 I think, like, the layout of the car and the, you know, like, FR, you know, FF, you know, rear wheel drive, all wheel drive, like, it can really change how you take that corner, right? So if you drive a car that understeers, like, you're going to try to keep more to the right and then open up the exit, right? If you have a car that really good front end, right, maybe you might stay really tight, abuse the curb, straight line, you know, flat through there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just I think it's very interesting. And, I mean, that's why I think driving is an art as well as science. Mm-hmm. It's both, right? So Patrick has a lot of the science and the art, of course, and, you know, the science backed by data. And then I think some of the art is that bravery, right? So B squared right there. Bring another plug. Bravery. Let's go.
So we need some water.
Yeah, I'm dying.
That's what I was about to do.
Excuse me. I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's the beer.
Jay, you want some?
I'm okay still. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just have such a obsession with DDT. It's like the first track I ever learned every single year.
Thank
you learn something new, you know? I remember like one summer, I think maybe like 3 summers ago with the supercharged version of the FRS. Mm-hmm. I just kept going back like every weekend, every other weekend.
Holy.
And, you know, it was like my first 38, first 37, first 36, first 35, first 34. I get a message from this guy. He's like, he sends me a screenshot of my videos with the time like dropping on every thumbnail. He's like, what is going on? And I was like, yeah, I'm just spending a lot of time there and just trying to find these cheat codes. But you know, to your point, like it's a track that just keeps giving. Like you're gonna find new places to find time. And if you think about what's happening in Ontario Time Attack when we go to DDT, it's probably like the track that is the craziest in terms of progression through the day. Mm-hmm. When the track gets quick, gets fast, everyone's out there like improving. It's like last year it was like down to the last session, and it was like between Eugene and Chris, right? Like razor thin margins for the victory, right? And because everyone's become quite adept at that track and finding these like, where can I cut because of all these corners, it's also gotten the reputation for being the track that basically cracks everyone's wheels. And I know you have some experience with that now too, right?
Yeah, on that point,
you cracked your wheels at DDT?
No, well, I bent my own wheels, right? But unfortunately, I think I bent Yalom's wheel when I took his car out.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
so there's no way of knowing who actually did that.
I know I did it. I'm pretty sure it was me.
Which corner was it? 8?
I have no idea, but I mean, obviously, I touched the curbs, right? Obviously, so I'm editing our video now, so I'm trying to look for that like thud, you know?
Yeah.
So front left. So
1B.
Last chicane, 1B.
Probably 1B, I'd guess.
Something like that. I don't know. We'll find out. I mean,
because usually it's the inside.
Inside it. Yeah, exactly.
Inside the rim. Yeah. Inside the rim.
No. What I mean is like
the inside curb.
Right side wheels are usually the ones that get bent.
Mm-hmm.
Or so it could be 1B or it could be 8.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Because that's one that everyone like loves to cut 8.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Right? Yeah.
That's like, if you don't bend your wheels at ZDT, you're not going fast enough.
Unfortunately. Yeah. This is one of the things that we always keep coming back to on the pod and on the channel is that like everything to do with your car is a consumable. Like don't be, like you can't think of anything on like if you just like consistently track something, you know, tires, brakes, fluids, obviously, mm-hmm. but like wheels, probably don't need those, you know, T37s as your track wheels. Get something, you know, flow exactly. form, $250 a corner or something like that.
Get something that you can replace, because I have this problem where I have raised 57 extremes and I pulled them off of the race car knowing they'd probably get screwed, but now I'm committed to those on my street car. But yeah, like Koenig is making an offering these days that you can get a single wheel replacement. Even Enki, sometimes it's hard to get even a single RPF one outside of used market. So
yeah,
try to get something you can replace because wheels are totally consumable.
Definitely, yeah. And if you're actually thinking about like pushing the limits, like Jason said, if you're thinking about cutting the corners, if you're basically thinking about getting faster, you gotta see them as consumables. And that's the only reason why I'm like, I'm okay. Like the wheel is bent. I don't care if I did it, if Jay did it. Right? It's going to happen. It at least gave me a really solid time to try to get to, right? Because I think Jay did. So I'm not going to say the time now because I don't think your video is out yet. But he was a lot.
Secrecy.
Yeah, it was a, I mean, I can say it if you want me to.
But secret.
Yeah, okay.
You got to go watch that video.
Yeah.
For the views.
But
wow, it was fast.
But it was fast, right? It was faster than my lap time, and that on its own is enough for me, right? I can see that the car can actually do it if you know how to get it there, right? Yep. So yeah
it's kind of crazy just like seeing what the first generation FRS can now do at that track. Like people have gone into the 36s. That's like it's absolutely crazy to think about.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Because like you remember when we were talking with Vin on our previous podcast, it's true. Like 10 years ago when people started first bringing these cars out, everyone's like, 144, 145, that's the limit. I can't see anyone going faster than that. 10 seconds is like,
It's massive.
It's a lifetime.
Yeah.
Huge. But
10 seconds is the difference between a GTI and an M2 comp.
Yeah, exactly. I'm getting front tires, man.
Let's go.
Let's go. You sign up. Come. We got to do another DDT day.
Yeah.
Well,
one.
Just do the car.
Let's do OTA. Let's do an OTA, man. Yeah. I want Yalom to come.
Yeah.
I will. Yeah. I will.
Yo, novice champion coming right here.
Yeah. Yeah.
When's DDT?
I have no idea, but
it's always we'll the go. End one. So it's kind of nice season closure.
If my BRZ is done, I might come play.
That'll be crazy.
I'll bring my axles. I'll bring my axles.
Thank you.
You know, the first time I did OTA was with my 86, my FRS, and I first competition session snapped an axle.
Wow.
Yeah. And ruined everyone's session.
What did you class?
It was
SGTB.
SGTB. Damn. Just barely SGTB.
Well, who am I gonna be fighting? Are we fighting you? No.
No, I'm mod, man. I'm
now like he is. SGTB would be Chris Baczynski. Okay. Good luck.
Yo, but he's out.
GG?
He's out.
All right.
Yeah, I think
new guy in town.
It would probably SGTB. Be low SGTB for you because you won't have like all the arrows.
Yeah, stuff no way. Like yeah,
that'll help a lot.
That's gonna be actually. I think you'll do quite well.
Maybe I won't vent the hood because that's pit points too.
Actually, it's not. You can vent the hood if it's for cooling purposes. If you don't have a front air dam or like a big ass lip or something.
Oh, real shit. Okay.
Yeah, well, if it's for cooling only.
The way that it's described is like it's not for aerodynamic benefits, but like how do you prove that? How do you disprove that?
I have no ducting, bro.
Yeah.
What exactly. do you mean?
Exactly.
I actually think it says like you have to have an air dam plus something and like the hood vent.
I see.
If you just have the hood vent, it's cool. I think.
All right. I'm venting my hood.
This is one person I usually would not trust.
Oh, trust me, bro.
Trust me, interpretation.
Source. Trust me, bro.
Yeah. That's definitely a Kevin question.
Or Pazinski. Dad exactly. Pazinski.
Yeah, you ask Kevin, then Kevin asks John.
Yeah.
It's usually how it goes. All right. So, you know, we've been going at this for about 90 minutes now. It's been a pretty fun conversation. I'm sure we'll have another one in due time, probably toward the end of the OTA season after you've racked up a couple of victories. one of the questions we always like to wrap up with new guests on the show is a segment we like to call Modest Dream Garage. Okay, so the idea is you have $200,000 Canadian, let's say.
Okay.
Okay, and you can only choose three cars, and those are the only three cars you have. What cars would you choose?
Okay, I have to think about it. Do we already know what these guys would choose?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, they're extremely basic.
I chose like M2, M3, and a BRZ or something like that.
No, mine wasn't that basic. I chose a Formula 1600.
Oh, okay, yeah, you want an open wheel.
I think it was a Forerunner or something.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I was actually thinking, I always wanted to have a 944.
Okay.
Sick. As my track/race car. Yeah. So I would probably build one of those.
Yeah. Would you swap the motor?
Not in the beginning, but eventually, I think. Yeah.
964 3-liter NA, which is what Mantis does with their race car. But sorry, continue.
Yeah, like I wouldn't say no to that, but like we have only 200K.
Yeah.
So, after that, I would probably get something like F-150, like work truck.
Yeah, tow things around.
Yeah, tow the 944, right? Yeah. And I always wanted to own 1M.
Mm.
I think that would be my weekend
huge fun, factory wide body.
Yeah, weekend fun car. I think that would be my modest dream garage. Yeah. Like 1M, that's F-150, cool. And a 944.
Yeah.
Like all race.
All these BMW lovers, man.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not with it. I don't like oil leaks, bro.
I'm really surprised there's no BRZ 86 in your three.
He does. It just has a Porsche badge on it. It's just the old
shiny. Right? I mean, yeah. Nah, if you're gonna dream, you might as well.
This guy's starting fights on the internet right here.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love the BRZ, obviously. But if I'm dreaming, yeah, 944, I think it's one step ahead.
Interesting.
It is cool. That car is
cool factor. Yeah. Cool. Sure, I'll give it to you. I don't know. Dynamics? I don't know.
You can build it, though. I just like the way it looks. I like the buildability of it, right?
They do look good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They do look good. And there's a lot in Lucky Dog. We see them a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yellen, when are you going to come endurance racing with us?
Whenever you have me. Whenever you think I'm worthy. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't take much, man. Yeah. It's,
What do you say is the key to being successful in endurance racing as a driver?
The key is not losing your cool.
Okay.
Like you can't be scared of the car or of the track when you're out there, especially for that long.
Yeah.
You have to be having fun and be able to have like a conversation in your head and also be cool with your own thoughts, because it's 2 hours is a long time to be just hearing like engine noise.
Yeah, daydreaming.
Yeah.
Happens.
Well, I mean, I'm used to going between two walls for like 2 hours, 10 times a day.
So. There you go. Yeah,
that's the car problem.
The biggest problem I have right now is I don't know any of the tracks here, right?
Yeah.
I've never driven at the big track. I've driven at Shannonville, but only once.
Yeah.
DDT, only twice. TMP, only once. Calabogie, never.
Yeah. Calabogie's amazing.
Calabogie's
There's a really good 3D model of it for a set of Corsa.
Yeah.
That's how most people learn it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Otherwise, you get lost.
Oh, yeah.
You're literally just like, I've seen this corner before. Yeah. Am I still on the same lap? There's a lot of that.
20 corners, man. It's a lot. Yeah. Dude, the sim model is great. They actually, like, I think Tooth Autosport commissioned the LiDAR scan of it.
That's amazing.
So it's like, it's really legit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. I mean, we'll get you out there. It's, you know, I always found like when we first started, like being in the like GT3 is always the sketchiest. Cause like you always think it's like, oh, faster car is going to be tougher. But like dealing with the traffic is really where the complexity comes in. And when you're in a slow car, like I feel like you have a lot more, not to say you have more responsibility, but you're asked to do a lot more and you have to be very active in looking and checking your mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're in a GT1 car, like you can relax a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if I can't imagine what it'd be like to be in a GT3 car, but watching a GT, like I can imagine two GT1 cars, probably me and probably like going racing or like one of you guys, like nerve wracking. I can imagine.
Yeah, for sure. Well, this has been fun.
Mm-hmm.
We will definitely do this again. Great getting to know Yalom here. I'm sure he'll be back on the show pretty often. Any last words, last thoughts? Any shout outs?
No, I mean, obviously shout out to Brian again, right? Mm-hmm. He's been the genius behind the build, right? He made everything possible. Like I said in the beginning, everything that we needed to work, he basically built it and it's been working perfect, right? So I have to thank him for that. But yeah, other than that, I always come back to this, like it's a community, right? If you want to be a part of it, trust me, you're welcome, right? If you've never been to a track, just go there, find one of us, and tell us that it's your first time at a track, and I guarantee you, you'll be overwhelmed by the support you'll get, right? So yeah, we're all here to make this a little bit more relatable, to get this, like make this a bigger community, right? To give you an example, I met Jay at a track day. I met Patrick through our club, right? And I met Jay like a week ago, right?
On the track.
Right? So, and we're here, right? So that's usually the vibe. If you think it's something that's going to make you happy, just chase it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not saying anything.
Yo, Mary, like, yo, if I had a daughter, I'd be like, yo, yo, Yalom, man.
Wow. Yeah. No, that's great. Say no to gatekeeping in the motorsports community.
Oh yeah, just come out.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's actually one of my ideas for like a bumper slap sticker. Like I don't know what I want to do with it yet, but something like along lines of like AMA, right? Which is just like an open invitation, right? You see the sticker, that means like the owner is like down to chat about anything and everything.
Dude,
just
that's cool.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
So something to think about. We'll come up with some designs. I think it'd be pretty cool.
That's super cool. Yo, I don't think we actually shouted everyone's channel though.
Yeah, let's do that. Start with you over there because you haven't heard this enough.
Woo! Hey guys, Jason here. Welcome to another episode of Driver's Paddock. Check it out.
What's going on, guys? Patrick from B Squared.
Oh, so much pressure now. I gotta come with the voice.
That is so good. With the voice. You do that. Like,
and I will see you guys at the track.
Oh yeah, he does do that. Oh man.
All right, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Track Use. In this episode, Brian again doing all the job, and I'm just trying to seem useful.
See, now I'm thinking I need to come up with a comment opening because I don't know if I have one. I'll just be like, if you've been following along with us for this.
That is your intro, though.
Two-track mic, guys, if you know that. Well, you're already here, so you know. But if you're not subscribed, please subscribe.
Yeah.
All right, that's a wrap. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right. Take care.